a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Call to order for Senate Commerce and Energy Committee. I'd like to greet everyone who's listening over the internet, if there are anyone, or if there is anyone there. Want to remind everyone to turn off your cell phones. And with that, let's just call the roll and get going.
Legalka?
Here.
Buell?
Here.
Jensen?
Here.
Johnston? Maher?
Here.
Lederman?
Here.
Pauline?
Here. Quorum is present. With that, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes from last meeting. Moved by Senator Buell, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor, please say aye. Any opposed? Motion carried. I'd like to remind everyone who's here to testify to please sign in. And I'd like to greet the pages. Have you come up and you can either tell us your worst Minnesota Vikings story or your favorite video game. Your choice. Come on up. Well, tell us your name, where you're from, where you're going to school, and then either your worst Minnesota Vikings story or, but it's got to be fast.
All right, I'm Paul Christensen from Huron, South Dakota. I'm going to be going to South Dakota School of Mines, and my favorite video game would probably be Minecraft.
My name's Adrian Del Grasso. I'm from Huron as well, and I'll be going to School of Mines as well, and my favorite video game is also Minecraft.
Fair enough. There are two different pages for those listening on the internet. Just because they're both going to School of Mines in anyway. So, with that, let's just... Now, is Minecraft, is that the one where you, like, click on it and don't... Or is that... Minesweeper, okay. Minecraft, I think it's a shoot-em-up space game.
No, it's like you build mines. It's a free-roll, like, build stuff. It's like Legos. But, like...
Oh, I know the one.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we won't make any comment. Senator Lehman leaned over to me and said, nerds. Okay. Anyway, with that, we will move on to our docket for today, starting with House Bill 1102, an act to reprise provisions regarding the South Dakota Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Act. Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, honorable members of the Senate Commerce Committee, Representative Tim Rounds, District 24 Pier, and my favorite video game is Pong. You had me worried there when you were requesting the worst Minnesota Viking story. I thought we would be here till next Christmas. House Bill 1102, 43 pages of a bill. You look at it, sort of the same as you would see some big fella coming down the hallway. You would be scared of him until you get to know him and get to know what's inside. You'll find out it's a teddy bear. This bill is a model act. Basically, the purpose of this bill is to update South Dakota statutes concerning the Guarantee Association to conform changes in the Model Act for Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Associations, which is maintained by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. This was most recently approved for changes in 2009. The Guarantee Association is a nonprofit legal entity created by statute, which is under the immediate supervision of the director of the South Dakota Division of Insurance. All insurers authorized to write life, annuity, or health insurance in South Dakota are members of the Guarantee Association by operation of law. The association exists to provide a safety net to policyholders of life, annuity, and health insurance companies if their insurance company becomes insolvent by paying the benefits which are due under the insolvent company's life, annuity, and health policies. Guarantee Association provides these benefits to residents of South Dakota and, under certain circumstances, to persons who reside elsewhere who are insured under policies issued by a life, annuity, or health insurer organized under South Dakota law. The legislation to create the association, Guarantee Association, was in 1989 and was based on the current version of a Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Model Act. This was promulgated by the NAIC, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, And since then, the NAIC has made numerous changes, some of them substantial, some of them very minor. The purpose of this bill is to amend South Dakota's Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Act so it conforms more closely with the Model Act and incorporates changes and improvements that were made by the NAIC in 2009. The association funds its operations by assessing its member companies. Assessments are made and collected by a line of business, and member companies' assessments are based on their pro rata market share of that line of business in South Dakota. This is a safety net, the Guarantee Association, for all these policies. What we are wanting to do is to conform these with other states under the National Act. As I gave the example, should somebody purchase insurance through a company organized in South Dakota, their rules and laws would be the same if they were living in California. And that's the purpose of this Model Act. And so everything is, there's conformity to it. The changes are a lot of it's cleanup, but I'm going to let some others behind me to speak to this act and remain available for questions.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents?
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Justin Smith, and I am a registered lobbyist for the American Council of Life Insurers. ACLI is the Life Insurance Trade Association, and we represent about 90% of the premiums and annuities in the life insurance market in the United States. First of all, I would just take exception to Senator Lederman's comment. I also have played Minecraft and would draw a little offense to being labeled as a nerd. Some of the background behind this bill, Representative Rounds has already given you a good explanation of the Guarantee Association. Each of you in your boxes yesterday or today should have received a copy of the bill brief that was prepared by the attorney for the Health and Life Guarantee Association in South Dakota. If you would like, I have extra copies of that and can provide you with one. This is a bill brief which takes you section by section through the entire 51 pages of the bill and explains all of the issues covered in that, and then it's the second part of it is a memorandum on the Health and Life Guarantee Association itself. The background behind this bill, it was crafted by the Health and Life Guarantee Association, which is a state entity in South Dakota. They worked on the updates to these statutes for months. They used the model prepared by the National Organization of Life and Health Guarantee Associations, NOLGA is the acronym. The Division of Insurance was consulted on this and asked for their approval, and you will hear from them in a moment. And then the National Association of Insurance Commissioners was also consulted and signed off. We have nothing to hide on this bill. Even though it is lengthy, in all the states where it has been proposed and passed, there has never been an opponent to the bill, and we do not know of any that will be here today. As far as insurance companies go, the reason why this bill is needed is because life insurance companies depend on consistency and uniformity across the states in which they operate. There have also been new developments in the law and the way that guarantee associations operate that are contained in 1102 and explained in the bill brief. The Division of Insurance and I can answer any questions that you might have, and I would note that the bill passed the House unanimously, again with no opponents in the House committee. And I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Merle Shiver with the Department of Labor and Regulation, Division of Insurance. And the Division of Insurance is the administrator for the Guarantee Fund. We're responsible for approving the manager itself, the operating plan, and also the board that goes with the Life and Health Guarantee Fund. The Guarantee Fund is important to South Dakota consumers. It assists them in making sure they're treated fairly in the event of insolvency, notified correctly and timely, and return any premiums that are due, and, of course, any claims that may occur because of the insolvency. As we stated earlier, this bill was a model act by National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and we're simply trying to update this model. For your information, there are two guarantee funds in the state of South Dakota. There's a property and casualty guarantee fund, and there's also a life and health guarantee fund, which is what this bill addresses. We updated the property and casualty statutes in 2000, or property and casualty guarantee fund in 2011, so we're asking you to do the same thing here for the life and health guarantee fund. And I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponents? Any further proponents? Hearing none, we'll ask for opponent testimony. Any opponents to House Bill 1102? Seeing none, we'll close testimony and open it up for questions and or discussion by the committee. Senator Beal.
Question for Mr. Smith. If I may, Mr. Smith, can you just sort of give us a general overview, maybe a few examples of things that we're dealing with here? It's kind of a lengthy bill, and we're, you know, I'm just kind of curious, you know, are we changing, you know, who's subject to the guarantee or the Guarantee Association or kind of what we're doing?
Mr. Chairman, certainly, Senator Buell, to the extent it's not covered in the bill brief, and again, it's tough dealing with a situation where a bill is so long, and even though it's not particularly complex, you also have a bill brief, which is also long. Some of the changes that are made in this bill, on pages 1, 2, and 3 of the memorandum, for instance, the first section of the bill makes it clear that the Guarantee Association does not cover Medicare Parts C and D. That is, again, necessary in order to make sure that our guarantee fund operates uniformly with the entire United States and all the other guarantee funds. Some of the sections, for instance, Section 3, deletes some superfluous language that is not needed as part of our Guarantee Association laws. Other sections in the bill are dealing with nationwide compromises between certain sectors of the life insurance industry and the life insurance industry as a whole. Those compromises in the way that our guarantee funds operate have now been incorporated into this bill and made part of our law. Again, as you can see from the bill brief, many of the changes made in this bill are form and style revisions, which simply means that because because of developments in the law nationwide, we no longer need those, or they're correcting errors which are on our statutes and have caused problems nationwide. Companies that are covered by this would be any life or health company doing business in South Dakota. Any life and health company issuing a policy here, if that company was to become insolvent, which could in some situations leave the insured high and dry, the Guarantee Association could step in and, using the money gathered through the assessments, be able to fulfill the obligations of that policy. Did that answer your question, Senator?
A quick follow-up. You mentioned that other states have kind of followed this model and adopted that, and there's can you mention, or do you have any idea of how many states roughly we're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, I do not have an exact number, Senator Buell. I do know that it is more than 20 and probably, I think, less than 30. But it is a growing number of states, and it's possible the Division of Insurance might have exact figures on that.
Thank you.
If you'd like to answer, I would be more than happy to.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. No, I don't. No, I won't. Because I don't have the same any numbers either. But what I can tell you, Senator Buell, is that usually with the NAIC on models such as this, there's usually conformity. And when this bill was passed at our what's called our roundtable, the insurance commissioners, I believe it was passed unanimously, which usually means that you will then provide that bill or produce legislation or move it forward in your individual state. So as Mr. Smith said, I think it's an ongoing thing that will be adopted by most of the states. Mr. Chair, no, it does not.
Any further questions? Any further questions? Seeing none, we'll open it up for discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Buell, thank you.
I move do pass.
Motion of do pass moved by Senator Buell, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any comments on that?
No, I think it's been explained adequately.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? With that, the motion is do pass, moved by Senator Buell, seconded by Senator Jensen. All those in favor will say aye, opposed nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Zagalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston? Excused. Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Pauline?
Aye.
It is unanimous.
Motion is unanimous on House Bill 1102. Senator Lederman, do you have something to say?
Mr. Chairman,
I move consent. Motion of consent moved by Senator Lederman, seconded by Senator Buell. This is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much, Senator Lederman. I did not want to carry that on the floor. Okay. With that, we'll move on to House Bill 1103, an act to exempt credit health insurers from certain provisions related to pre-existing conditions. Welcome back, Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, good morning to the honorable members of the Senate Commerce Committee. I'm a little nervous right now because I'm supposed to be chairing House local government, and the senator to my right behind me, he had the first bill up, and I advised him to take his time. He looks a little like he was a little mischievous over there, so I've got to hurry back to that committee and fix all the problems. But I bring to you House Bill 1103. This deals with pre-existing conditions of credit health insurance plans. So let's not get this confused with a health insurance policy, a standard health insurance policy. This is dealing with credit health insurance plans. Credit insurance provides consumers with financial security of knowing that their debt will be repaid in the event of unexpected events such as a disability. Pre-existing conditions for credit health are addressed in administrative rule adopted by the Division of Insurance in January of 2012. This rule is consistent with the NAIC model and is consistent with pre-existing condition provisions for credit health insurance in other surrounding states. Credit health insurance companies support this rule. Unfortunately, shortly after the rule was implemented, the division discovered an inconsistency between the rule and our state laws concerning pre-existing condition provisions applicable to all accident and sickness policies. In response, the division issued a bulletin stating that the provisions of the rules could not be implemented because of the inconsistencies. Credit health insurers are bringing this bill, which is a simple fix. It accepts credit health insurance from the general pre-existing conditions provisions in SDCL 5817 and CL 58-18, which removes any inconsistencies and allows implementation of the administrative rule that was adopted by the Division of Insurance. Again, this is a simple fix of a small problem that only affects credit health insurance. It does not have any ramifications on any other lines of insurance. I would ask for your support on this. Like I said, I've got local government, which is probably in a mess right now. If anybody has questions, I've got to run, but if anybody's got questions of me, I'm going to turn it over to some others. But
as Senator Lederman said, we can kill it without you.
I thank you for your consideration, but if there's no questions, I do have to run to another committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Like I said, I better get back to the other.
Thank you very much, Representative Rounds. I don't think anyone has any questions specifically for you.
Lady knows it all.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Darla Pullman Rogers, and I'm a registered lobbyist for Consumer Credit Industry Association, CCIA. That's a trade association comprised of insurance companies that underwrite consumer credit insurance products. As Representative Rounds said, the goal of this industry is to provide consumers with financial security and assuring that their debts will be paid in the event they become disabled or unable to pay those debts. A couple of examples of credit health insurance would be if I would go and buy a car and then I finance it, I would buy a credit health insurance policy that would step in and make my payments if I become ill or disabled and I can't maintain my job. I might do the same thing if I opened a Best Buy account or a Macy's account. I could buy a credit health insurance policy to assure that my bills will be paid in the event I become disabled or ill. As stated by Representative Rounds, we bring you Senate Bill or House Bill 1103. It's a simple statutory fix for an inconsistency that has recently come to light or brought to light by the Division of Insurance. And the inconsistency is between an administrative rule, which is 20.06.06.04.02, and that section of or that rule deals specifically with pre-existing conditions for credit health insurance. The two statutes that are inconsistent with that rule are found in 5817 and in 5818, and they deal generally with all accident and sickness types of policies. For years, the pre-existing condition provisions for credit health insurance policies were interpreted in this state in a manner that's consistent with the NAIC model and also with the rules and statutes in other states. And then early in 2012, these pre-existing condition provisions were actually implemented in this rule. They were formally adopted by the division, and CCIA was involved in that process. They fully support this rule. It is consistent with the NAIC model, and I did look at some other states, and it is consistent with their rules as well. Shortly after the effective date of the rule, the Division of Insurance issued a bulletin. It was Bulletin 12-01, and the bulletin stated that even though credit health insurance policies had pre-existing condition provisions that were consistent with this rule, the rule is inconsistent with two statutory provisions. And so what the division in essence said is we can't really enforce this rule the way it was promulgated or adopted because of these inconsistencies. Statutes trump rules. This certainly raised some concerns in the industry. It changed the market practice of these companies, and it also raised a concern of anti-selection. So what we were looking for is what's the simplest resolution or fix for this problem. And so what House Bill 1103 does is it amends SDCL 5817-92 and 5818-86. Those are the two statutory provisions. And what it does is excludes their application to credit health insurance. We believe that this will effectively remove the inconsistency. It will allow implementation of the rule as it was adopted, and it will also allow the companies to continue with their current market practices. And as Representative Rounds said, this bill only affects credit health insurance policies. There was a slight amendment of the bill on the House side, and that was just a title amendment. It had originally read an act to exempt credit life insurers, and this really deals with credit health insurance. That title amendment was made, and the bill did pass through the House on the consent calendar. So I don't believe we've had any opponents so far. I'm hopeful that that explains what we're trying to do, and it, like I said, it's a very narrow fix. We would really urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponents? Any further proponents? Seeing none, we'll ask for opponent testimony on 1103. Seeing none, we'll close testimony and open it up for questions and or discussion by the committee. Questions and or discussion and or action. Senator Bogalka.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass.
Second.
Motion of due pass moved by Senator Bogalka, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any comments on that? Seeing none, all those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston? Is excused. Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Colleen?
Aye.
It's unanimous.
Motion is unanimous. Senator Bogalka. Motion of consent moved by Senator Bogalka, seconded by Senator Jensen. This is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, nay. We'll say all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. House Bill 1103 is placed on the consent calendar. Thank you very much, committee. We'll now move on to House Bill 1191, an act to provide provide for the issuance of additional retail fireworks licenses. Sorry about that. With that, we'll open it up for proponent testimony. Welcome, Representative.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Representative Dan Dryden from Rapid City, District 34. This bill, 1191, in my view, is to correct an oversight that we did a couple years ago. As those of you that were here a couple years ago, we authorized fireworks over New Year's. And it was authorized fireworks to be shot December 28th through January 1st. And how we did that, and I think I'll go back and review the licensing for a minute to, so you understand how we got where we are and what we're trying to do. Now, in the retail fireworks, first of all, there's a $25 permit that retailers buy, and that allows them to sell fireworks June 27th through July 5th. That's all that does, a $25 permit. If they want to sell for a longer period of time, for $1,000, they can buy a permit to sell to non-residents starting May 1 and going through July 5th for $1,000. And that's to non-residents. And then after the 5th of July, if they want to continue to sell fireworks, they can purchase another $1,000 permit that allows retailers to sell fireworks from July 6th through August 31st. To, again, non-residents. So what we did 2 years ago when the issue came up to allow fireworks over New Year's, we set the dates December 28th through January 1st. And what we did at that time, we just said, if you have the $1,000 permit to sell July 6th through August 31st, you can also then sell December 28th to January 1 to residents and non-residents. What we kind of overlooked at the point, at the time, and didn't think of it, in my mind anyway, is that small retailer that buys the $25 permit and sells June 27th through July 5th, the only way they can sell December 28th through January 1 is to go buy the $1,000 permit. And they don't, of course, don't want to do that. You know, you're risking weather and what have you in December. So this bill allows those small temporary retailer to buy another $25 permit to sell December 28th through January 1. And that's the extent of what this bill does. And I would appreciate your support and try to answer any questions if you have.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents? Any further proponents on 1191? Seeing none, we'll ask for opponent testimony. Any opponents to 1191? Seeing none, we'll close testimony and open it up for questions and or discussion by the committee. Questions and or discussion and or action. Senator Lederman.
Mr. Chair, I think the proponent testimony was sufficient. We're talking about extending this license for these folks. When we actually did that fireworks bill a couple years ago, I think most everybody here was part of that when we passed it to extend the sales period to cover that. And the way that bill was written, I think this is a good fix, or at least a good way to do it a little bit better, to open that market up to some of these retailers that are smaller and want to still sell, but don't have the funds to buy the more expensive permit or license because they don't want to have that much time. So I support the bill, and I would look forward to any amendment or any motions from the committee.
Actually, the chairman will say I remember this bill. Wasn't it your bill a couple years ago?
Mr. Chairman, actually, this was like, I think, 4 years ago we started talking about moving the sales and over New Year's, but there was a bit of a kerfuffle over Christmas. So it was vetoed, actually, by Governor Rounds.
Oh.
And then it was brought back. So, I've been working on this for a while.
And I think I voted against the bill, but I'm happy to say I was wrong because I love blowing stuff up in the middle of winter. So with that, we are looking for a motion by the committee. Senator Jensen. Motion of due pass moved by Senator Jensen, seconded by Senator Lederman. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, this is a voice vote. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll. motion is do pass. Yeah.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnson's excused. Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Pauline?
Aye.
Unanimous. Six.
Motion is unanimous in favor of do pass on House Bill 1191. Motion of do pass consent moved by Senator Jensen. Do we have a second on that?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Lederman. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, this is a voice vote. All those in favor of placing 1191 on consent say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? House Bill 1191 is moved consent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to take just not a quick break, but I'd like to give the opportunity for someone from the Rural Electrics to come forward and just say hello, if you'd like to. Okay, Senator Maher is going to introduce you.
But they're from the Moro Grand Electric Co-op located in Timberlake, and they serve two easy blocks in the city. That's the one from the most part in the back.
Yeah.
Melissa Maher.
Melissa Maher, yes.
She's a gentleman.
Any relation?
Yes.
Probably from her perspective, not yours. I think she might be the one to not claim you. But anyway, thank you very much for introducing them. Thank you for being here at the Capitol. Yep. Senator Bogalka.
We also have a couple gentlemen from HD Electric, Clear Lake, and Doolin and Hamlin counties. Matt Hotz are the manager, and Mr. Olson.
Dale Williams.
Dale Williams from Esteline on the board. Yeah, thank you, Dale. And we have REAs from all over the state here today.
Yes. So thank you very much for being here. It's fun to see you guys back again at the Capitol. And hopefully we haven't messed things up too bad this year for you. So with that, we'll move on to House Bill 1194, an act to revise the period during which fireworks may be discharged. Any proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee. I'm Representative Jim Stalzer from District 11 in Sioux Falls, and I'm actually bringing this bill out of Hamlin County, where last year at Lake Ponset a lot of people were shooting fireworks the Saturday after the 4th of July, actually unaware that shooting of fireworks ends on July 5th. This was on Saturday night, which would have been the 7th. This year, the 4th of July is on Thursday, which means the end of shooting would be Friday night, and a lot of people are going to be shooting illegally on Saturday evening. So anyway, the Hamlin County Deputy Sheriff shut down all of Hamlin County, and we got to sit and watch our the other people around the lake in Brookings County go ahead and continue shooting. So a lot of the people there asked me if I got elected, if I would bring this bill. So here I am. The big thing is everybody, or a lot of people, families get together for the 4th of July. It's a big summer outdoor activity. They have their picnics and outdoor activities and so on. But a lot of people have to work the next day, because the 4th is so often during the week. And we can shoot for about 10 days before the 4th of July, but the current law says one day after. And so what we're asking is that this be extended so that you can shoot. And my original bill said through the Saturday after the 4th, but in the House Commerce Committee, they disagreed with me and added Sunday to the bill. So the only opposition we had so far was they added a day to it. It still have to follow all the fire restrictions. It's not increasing the number of days that you can sell fireworks. It's only permitting people to shoot the fireworks that they've already purchased. And again, a lot of people, we had two people from the industry testify in the House committee, and they testified to mom and apple pie and all the, you know, the big 4th of July celebration. So with that, I would ask that you do like the House has done and pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponent testimony? I know Senator Lederman is on the bill, and he asked to have the leniency to just testify from his chair up here at the committee. So unless there's any objections from the committee, I'll let him testify just from up here. Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Dan Lederman. I'm prime sponsor of this bill in the Senate. We get about $350,000 a year in sales tax revenue from this industry. I feel that fireworks have been a good corporate citizen, and it's also an activity that does bring families together. And I would hope that we could allow our residents to discharge those fireworks until the end of that weekend following the 4th of July, especially when we have a lot of times that day will end on a Thursday, so you have that weekend following. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents? Seeing none, we'll ask for opponent testimony on 1194. Any opponents? Seeing none, we'll close testimony and open it up for questions and or discussion. Senator Maher, did you? I know on behalf of all us politicians up here, we like shooting fireworks, having that leniency for a few more days after being busy in parades all day on the 4th. So with that, we're looking for a motion. Senator Maher. Motion of due pass on House Bill 1194, moved by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Lederman. Any comments on that? Senator Bogalka.
Thank you, sir. I think it just makes sense when we look at the last bill. Now, previously, the shooting period coincided exactly with the selling period, the 27th of June through the 5th of July, and I always wondered why that was such a short window, and obviously some of us probably have been shooting past the 5th of July anyway, so I won't mention any names, but I appreciate their yay vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further comments? Seeing none, the motion is due pass on House Bill 1194. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston's excused. Maher?
Aye.
Dillerman?
Aye.
Colleen?
Aye.
Unanimous.
House Bill 1194 received a unanimous due pass motion. Motion is consent, moved by Senator Maher. Do we have seconded by Senator Buell? Any comments on that? Seeing none, this is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. House Bill 1194, moved on to the floor on consent. Thank you very much. Our last bill of the day is House Bill 1234, which is going to be nowhere near as contentious as last year's House Bill 1234. This is an act to provide a limited exception to the provisions that exempt sports shooting ranges from the public nuisance laws. Any proponent testimony?
Hi.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, Representative Scott Eklund, District 25. I'm glad you got the 1-2-3-4 thing right out of the way, right out of the gate there, because I had some comments I was going to make about it, but I'm not going to now. So just moving right into the bill here. Imagine that you're relaxing outside of your home in the country, playing in the backyard with your little 3-year-old daughter, and all of a sudden you hear some shots being fired coming from your neighbor's land, and you think, he must be out target practicing, no big deal. You turn back to your daughter when suddenly you hear a bullet whiz by, then another bullet hits a tree nearby. You grab your daughter, you race into the house, and you dial 911. The shooting continues for a couple of hours. The sheriff's office comes out and takes a report, even as the bullets are whizzing by. The shooting finally stops, and thankfully none of your loved ones are injured, and you think, this was bad, but it won't happen again because the law will protect us. This scenario occurred 4 separate times this past year for a family who is in my district and is here today. The sheriff's office submitted all their evidence to the state's attorney, including a video documenting bullets flying around the house. I've listened to the video. You can hear them hit the trees in the backyard of the house. The conclusion from the state's attorney was that there was not enough evidence to charge the neighbor with reckless discharge of a weapon. The sheriff's talked with the neighbor. He refused to change the direction of his shooting. He had set up his own private range, and when he set that up, he set it up right in line with the house, the neighbor's house. Crazy. When I heard this story, I just thought, I mean, we actually have to make a law that says we have to do this, but apparently we do. Since I introduced this bill, another family in my district contacted me, and they are also here today. Their circumstances are different, but the threat to their lives is the same, and they're here to share their story as well. And I'm going to get out of the way here in just a minute. I just want to tell you, this bill allows these families who are fearing for their lives in my district, right outside of Sioux Falls, the chance to have their day in court. Up to this point, there's been no legal action that they could take other than civil, which would cost tens of thousands of dollars. This bill does not, and I repeat, does not shut down or affect existing shooting ranges that are operating in a safe and lawful manner. The Game Fish and Parks, which supports over 100 ranges in this state, do not oppose this bill, and they are here today. And I was sitting back there with Scott from Game Fish and Parks. He's not opposing the bill. This also is not a gun control bill, and I want to make that clear. My constituents are hunters, NRA members. I've got more guns than I should have, probably. I got a lot of guns. I love my guns, and I'm a Second Amendment enthusiast. But this bill is a human safety bill. So thank you for considering passing House Bill 123 plus 4, and I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponent testimony?
Good morning. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Darren Tim. I'm a resident of District 25 in rural Minnehaha County. I'd like to state for the record I support the Second Amendment and I'm an avid hunter and fisherman. I'm testifying today on behalf of my family in support of House Bill 1234, and I agree with Representative Eklund's assessment. This is not a bill addressing gun control, but a bill that promotes public safety. To give you some background on this rifle range is being used, it's a piece of plywood that is held off the ground by two posts. According to Google Maps, the target is 141 meters or 154 yards from my closest building. This individual and his guest shoot into the side of a hill in a direct line to my property. There is no berm, no sidewalls, no backstop, no range officer, no conditional use permit, since this is a private individual shooting on private land. On the occasions in question, there are multiple shooters shooting at this target for periods of 1 to 4 hours at a time. In February 2012, I came home from an ice fishing trip and was putting away my equipment in one of my old buildings. While I was in this building, I heard several shots being fired. I dismissed it as someone must be target shooting. I then started to hear bullets breaking the sound barrier. I then went outside to investigate and realized that these shots were coming from my neighbor's property and were passing directly over my residence. Luckily, my wife and daughter, who was 3 years old at the time, were not home. I felt incredibly unsafe and went into my home. I made a call to my county sheriff's office and found out that this had already been reported. I asked what the outcome was. The phone representative stated she wasn't sure and asked if I would like the reporting officer to call me. I answered yes. I received a call from the deputy and advised that she had investigated the situation and didn't find any reason for alarm. In March 2012, after my wife, daughter, and I returned home from work on a Friday evening, we began hearing shots being fired at the same shooting range. I again witnessed bullets flying over our residence. I also witnessed a bullet hit the roof of my home. A call was placed to our county sheriff's office, and I explained these bullets are flying over our home. After the sergeant and another police officer left my neighbor's land, I received a call from the sergeant that responded to this call. He informed me that he met with the shooters and was advised that one of the shooters was shooting a rifle at a range of 20 yards. The sergeant deemed the practices safe and dismissed the incident. The following morning, my wife and I woke to a beautiful spring day. I went outside and began working in the yard. My wife and 3-year-old daughter later joined me outside. Again, we began hearing bullets breaking the sound barrier above us. We immediately grabbed our daughter and brought her inside her residence. We called the sheriff's department once again and reported the incident. A deputy came to my residence and a sergeant went to the shooter's location. I answered the normal questions as to what I was hearing and why a call was placed to the sheriff's office. A short time later, the sergeant joined the deputy at my residence. The sergeant explained to me that he spoke with shooters and didn't see any need for alarm. I explained that there were bullets flying over our residence and this was an extremely dangerous practice. The sergeant stated he deemed the target practice was safe. I advised him again, there are bullets flying over our home. I've seen a bullet hit our residence. The sergeant dismissed my claim and explained that hearing shooting is part of living in the country and that I'm probably safer now than I would be during the deer season. I asked the sergeant to stay on my property since I was sure that if he stayed long enough, he would hear bullets overhead. The sheriff left soon afterwards, but before he left my property, the deputy advised me to set up a recording device to verify my story. I followed his advice, set up a camera, and have this video in my possession today. After reviewing the video, I became more and more distraught. I realized that it would be necessary to speak with my neighbor, which I did in March 2012. During the conversation with my neighbor, it became clear to me that he had no intention of moving the range to a safer location. So I drafted a letter and sent it to my neighbor, formalizing my concern for my family's safety in regards to the use of this range. I also formalized my request to move the range to a safer location on his property. I then contacted the sheriff's department and asked if I could review the police reports from these incidents. I was advised that no case file exists and no police report was filed. I then contacted the responding sergeant from the most recent incident. I explained that I took their advice, recorded the shooting after they left, and asked if he would review the footage. The sergeant came out to the shooting range in question and did some research on the layout of the range in reference to my home. He concluded that the line of fire was approximately 30 feet behind my home. The sergeant and I then went into my home to review the video. As the bullets in the video were heard passing over the residence, the sergeant asked, in what seemed to me to be a surprised voice, "Is that what you've been hearing?" I looked at him and nodded yes, in acknowledgement. He stated that he had spoken with the Game Fish and Parks and advised there isn't a law that governs this type of situation. I asked about the negligence laws, and I was informed that he didn't feel the shooting was negligent and no crime has been committed. He advised me that this is a civil case and an injunction could be filed. I then thanked him for addressing my concern and coming to my residence to review the video. Being unsatisfied with this assessment of the situation, I drafted another letter and addressed it to my county sheriff's department and my county state's attorney's office indicating my concerns. In this letter, I stated the use of the range was causing bullets to fly over my home, strike my home, and trees on my property. I stated in the letter that I viewed this situation as grossly negligent, the endangerment of public safety, and the reckless discharge of a firearm. I also included copies of the video, the letter addressed to my neighbor, and maps of my neighbors and my adjoining properties. In this letter, I also requested a written response addressing my concerns from each corresponding department. These letters were hand-delivered to my county's sheriff's department and my county state's attorney's office in March 2012. Shortly thereafter, I received a visit at my home from the reporting sergeant and a captain within the sheriff's department. They emphasized with me and explained they both have children and do not want to see anyone get hurt, but they didn't feel any laws were being broken at this time. I asked if they reviewed the video. They answered yes, but they stated there's not conclusive evidence that the bullets are flying over my home. The officers advised me to call them the next time this target range is being used, and they would send out an officer to corroborate my story. He also stated that he informed all of his sergeants of this situation. I explained that my main concern was for my 3-year-old daughter. I then thanked the officers for coming out to discuss my concerns, and they left. During the summer of 2012, there were cattle on my neighbor's land where the shooting range is located, and the range was not used during this time frame. We now fast forward to October 2012. I returned home from the public land pheasant opener to find that the shooting range was being used once again. And once again, bullets were flying over our residence. My wife gathered our daughter, placed her in her car, and left. I stayed back to call the sheriff's department, and in my call, I indicated this was a pending case that I believed to be under investigation. A deputy arrived shortly after the call was placed. I met with the deputy and had a long and detailed conversation with her regarding the bullets flying over our residence. She identified that the bullets are flying over my residence and stated a ricocheting bullet can be lethal. She explained it as a civil matter since there are no laws that pertain to this. After she left my residence, the use of this range continued for 1 to 2 hours and bullets continued to ricochet through the air. On February 21st, 2013, I spoke with the Sheriff's Department for an update on the October 2012 incident and found that no case file exists for this incident and no police report was filed. I'm asking that the committee vote yes on House Bill 1234. I believe this bill has has the ability to save lives. My family represents three of those lives. Thank you for your time and consideration of this bill, and I stand by for questions.
Thank you very much. Wow, I thought I've had some bad neighbors in my past, but...
I got you beat, I think.
Yeah. With that said, any further proponents on House Bill 1234?
Morning, Chairman and Committee. Thank you for letting me speak this morning. My name is Kelly Balness. My husband, Kurt, and I live just east of course in South Dakota. We have four children, their spouses, and seven grandchildren who frequent our home. I'm here today to speak not just on our behalf, but on behalf of many of our neighbors. We have all been fighting a complaint within the Minnehaha County system because of the following. In June of 2011, after hearing loud rapid fire from the direction of the Big Sioux Rifle Club, which is located just half mile northeast of our home, we discovered a bullet hole on the exterior wall of my kitchen. We also discovered a ricochet on the wall of our garage. We called the police, an officer came and took a report, but told us it was a civil matter and directed us to speak with the members of the rifle club. We visited with the board members of the club, and we were told they would contact an NRA range specialist and see what needed to be done to improve the safety of the range and make sure this never happened again. We followed up, the police followed up, but nothing was done. Fast forward to May of 2012. Our son Derek was working just north of our home on a waterfall of a small pond. The pond lies approximately 50 yards behind our house between us and the rifle club. So if you could picture the positioning, a large great owl with a bucket was parked beside Derek. Derek is on the north side of the waterfall, and our UTV was parked south of Derek on the other side of the waterfall about 20 feet away. Derek hears a shot whiz right by his head and pings something metal. He dives under the bucket of the great owl, calls 911 while several other shots land around him. A sheriff's deputy arrives and takes a report and goes to speak with the range officer, who denies everything. The deputy returns, and we insist that we all walk the perimeter of the pond area to see if we can find where the bullets have hit. The deputy finds a bullet hole in the canvas of the UTV topper and the point where the bullet hit the roll bar, which was head height. And the officer looks down and finds the bullet lying just below on the ground. Finally, we think something will be done. The deputy returns to the rifle club, and they then admit something happened and that the shots did come from the range. There's a police report, there's testimony, and still we find no relief. Again, we are told to get a lawyer. This was a civil matter. However, we were also told that we could not get copies of the police reports because it was an ongoing investigation. Now what do we do? We have spent months being misdirected and redirected. We have spent money on legal fees and time doing legwork ourselves. Our son is shot at, and we are blocked by the existing nuisance law from recourse. We initially argued the nuisance law, and although the Big Sioux Rifle Club admittedly violated their conditional use permit by the range officer leaving the premises during the time our son was shot at, even though the Big Sioux Rifle Range added five new tactical live-action ranges without the benefit of a conditional use permit, and the ranges were only discovered during our research, all this and the law precluded anything from being done. Let me be clear. We believe in the Second Amendment as well. This issue is not about guns. This issue is about the responsibility of our government officials to demand responsibility from those people in charge of running shooting ranges. We did not file this complaint to shut anyone down. We filed it because the range was no longer safe to those around it, and this was our only recourse. We no longer felt safe in our own backyards, and nor do our neighbors. Never in a million years would I have imagined that someone I love would be shot at and no one would do anything. So we did something. We filed a complaint with the Minnehaha County Planning Office. We presented the complaint to the Planning Commission. We won. The rifle range would be forced to implement new safety protocols. But then the rifle club appealed. We have been before the Minnehaha County Commission three times, and they sent us back to the Planning Commission, citing, again, the vagary of law. We actually represented our case to the Planning Commission last night. I'm not even really sure what to tell you about that. We haven't had time to digest it. Some concessions were made to us. Quite a few concessions were made to the gun club. And we're still understanding that the gun club is appealing it back to the county commission. So during the course of all this, the law allows business as usual. The big Sioux can do whatever they want until all appeals are exhausted. How can it be that a shooting range has no responsibility or accountability? Neither the club nor its board nor its members have to answer to anyone. We are in support of House Bill 1234, not because we want the club shut down, but because if we all want ranges to be available to us, we need to put human safety first. Honestly, I cannot even believe I need to argue this point. House Bill 1234 provides a legitimate source of relief for persons at lethal risk and entangles the hands of police and officials to address ranges who disregard human safety. Understandably, the nuisance law came into effect for just that, stopping nuisance litigation over dust or noise. However, to even equate the near shooting of our son with being a nuisance is laughable, and by that I actually mean horrible. A nuisance, by definition, is an inconvenience or annoyance. I would submit that almost killing our son... is not nearly an annoyance. Be that as it may, House Bill 1234 is what makes available a remedy for life-threatening situations because, to quote the bill, we have been victims of significant threat to human life and private habitations, and we would ask that you vote in favor of the bill so this can never happen to us or anyone else again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents? For the people in the audience who might not see the bill, basically, it adds a new section that says, if the usage or design of a range results in significant threat to human life or private habitations, a nuisance is constituted, and an injunction may prescribe appropriate relief. So it's not about noise or anything like that. It's just about threat to human life. That's what specifically it addresses. So you're caught up to speed. Any further proponents on 1, 2, 3, 4? Seeing none, we'll ask for opponents to 1, 2, 3, 4. Any opponents out there? Seeing none, we will close testimony and open it up for questions and our discussion by the committee. Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the prime sponsor.
Yes, sir. Scott Eklund, Representative, District 25.
Thank you. Just a clarification, we heard from two different proponents. Are these two separate entities, or is this one entity that's been the cause of the issues?
Two separate entities, and actually I've heard of a couple others across the state, which I was very surprised about. I didn't think this was that big a deal until we started digging a little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Maher.
I wasn't sure where that came from. I had no idea. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have one minute. Senator Maher.
Have you had a chance to review the amendment?
3 minutes ago.
Okay.
Do you have an opinion on the amendment before it's out there?
I don't really have an opinion yet. I'm not an attorney. I'd like to have the LRC take a look at it, and it was a little bit of a surprise. I was wondering where it came from. I understand that.
Okay. For those listening, I always think it's best to if you can follow the process and not just be paying about that. Excuse me, Representative, we have one more question for you. I just want to fill in the audience on what the amendment does. It's an amendment that would add a Section 3 on page 2 after line 6, and it says, for the purposes of 21-10-28 to 21-10-34 inclusive, a sport shooting range is an area designed and operated for the use of rifles, shotguns, or pistols as a means of silhouette, skeet, trap, black powder, or other sport shooting. A sport shooting range includes any shooting range located on public or private land or operated by a private entity or by a public entity and includes a law enforcement shooting range. That is the amendment.
All right.
With that, Senator Buell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund, this was your map. Was that correct?
No, it came from my constituent.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I have a question for whoever passed this out then.
Mr. Volnis? Mr. Kim, sorry about that.
If I may, Mr. Chair. Mr. Volnis, so if I'm getting this correctly, you testified that, you know, looking at this map, that the fire location is, you know, in a trajectory that's toward your house. And you'd said you asked your neighbor to change direction and they just said no, or?
My name is Darren Tim.
I'm sorry, I got the name wrong.
Sorry.
So.
Yeah, and yes, is the answer to your question. It was a 12-minute conversation. I asked numerous times if you would change the direction or change the location, you know, shooting to the south. There, directly to the south of us, there's no homes for 2 miles. To me, that made more sense to shoot that direction, but to him, it did not.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Any further questions? I have one for Representative Eklund. Representative, because I know that there are a lot of people, myself included, who do like sports shooting and things mm-hmm. like that. Let's say if there is a range located within an area where it could impact a private residence. Now, it seems like with Mr. Tim's testimony, this person just put up a piece of plywood and that was it. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's correct.
But let's say if he did build his own private range, but did it adequately, you know, with a berm, with all the safety precautions and things like that, would that be allowable then? I mean, because then it would not represent a threat to human life, would it? Or
Scott Eklund, Representative District 25, I think it'd be totally allowable. I like to shoot. I shoot at my house. I live 2 miles from Mr. Tim's. And when he called me up and told me what was happening, I was shocked that there was anything like this even going on. And I like to sight in my 270 Magnum before I go out and deer hunt. And I do it on my 10 acres. And I shoot in a direction that there's, you know, that it's safe. There's no houses. And I thought it's just common sense. But, you know, this is my first year in the legislature, and I'm learning that sometimes we have to legislate this. But no, from what you described, this bill would not affect that whatsoever, and it does not affect any other ranges that are up to speed, and that's why the Game Fish and Parks is not testifying against it today, and they are in the room. So
okay, thank you. Any further questions? Senator Beal. Thank you, Senator Beal. I was going to go down that line for just a second, too. Could you please identify yourself right away?
Good morning. I'm Scott Simpson, South Dakota Game Fish and Parks.
If I may.
Senator Beal.
Mr. Simpson, understanding that you're not here as either a proponent or an opponent, just for technical clarification, I'm looking at this map of the private land that was handed out, and if I'm understanding the legal framework that exists right now without this bill being in place, someone putting up a target between their firing location and whatever houses may exist in that direction makes it then a shooting range that folks have felt makes them exempt from any sort of recourse that sheriff deputies could avail themselves of or things like that because it counts as a shooting range. Is that accurate?
Sure. Senator Beal, I think that the definition of a shooting range is rather broad. It's broad in statute as it sits today. I think it would be up for debate as to whether or not a private individual shooting on his private land constitutes a shooting range. It is obviously they have set up a target and they've got a bench of some sort. You know, does that meet the definition of design? I think that's open for interpretation, and I don't know that I can give you that interpretation. Our initial opposition to this bill, and I'm not taking a side on this as we sit here today, was with some of the original language that talked about legal definition or legal term as moving towards a nuisance. and an established, legally operated, and safe range that an individual could purchase land, fee title to land close to and an existing range, and you know, and then say, well, you know, the noise is bothering me. The activity is bothering me. And that's where we oppose this bill. That language has been taken out. But I, you know, it gets back to what is that legal definition of a range, and I don't know that I can give you an exact term for that. What I can tell you is we work with ranges all over the state. We have a grant system where local funds come in, and we match those funds sometimes on a 3-to-1 basis, a maximum of a 3-to-1 basis. And we are cognizant of safe and responsible operation of those ranges. Neither of these situations are anything that we are involved in. One of them is a private range that sells private memberships, and the other one is that, you know, one individual. And I'm sorry I'm not able to give you a definitive answer.
Senator Buehler.
Thank you. So if I'm understanding this correctly, you know, this gentleman, because he's got a target set up, theoretically, falls under the really broad definition of what a range is and is allowed to fire in that direction as it sits right now. If he didn't bother to put up a target, he couldn't shoot at those houses, correct?
Again, that gets in... Excuse me, Mr. Chair. We've discussed, I've discussed with Representative Eklund and Mr. Tim the fact that our legal counsel believes that this is reckless discharge of a firearm. I know that that's the avenue that they pursued in Minnehaha County. I don't know that if a target changes that or not. I would still say that if you put a target in a place where it shouldn't be and you discharge a firearm into that target, that is still reckless discharge. That probably is my personal opinion, though, and not the opinion of the department.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A little bit of we're looking at an amendment. I guess I would ask. I know we kind of went over what a shooting range is and whatnot, but if I could ask the gentleman from Game Fish and Parks what his opinion of is of 1234JA, which would include the words "any shooting range located on public or private land or operated by a private entity or by a public entity," and includes those words being added to the statute. Does that limit or change the intent of this bill as you see it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lederman, again, I saw this amendment at the same time that Representative Eklund did, and I haven't had a whole lot to time to digest it, nor do I purport to be a legal eagle to tell you exactly what a private entity or a public entity, either one is. I don't believe it drastically changes things, but that's, again, I don't know that that I would support this at this time, or that the department would support this. Just because we aren't, I'm not exactly sure what it does or why that language is in there. And maybe the explanation is forthcoming as to why that language is being put forth.
Thank you very much. We're still on the bill 1234. We're not going to tackle any of the amendments quite yet. Are there any questions on 1234? Any further questions? With that, Senator Maher, are you ready to talk of the amendment? Okay. The amendment is 1234 Juliet Alpha, and this is the one that adds the any shooting range located on public or private land amendment. Senator Maher.
Shooting ranges up there, and the exact same thing is happening in that part of part of the world too. And this was actually brought forward to me. It was brought to my attention a couple years ago. She said, I haven't ever found a real way of addressing some of their concerns. And what my intention was is because of the way that Missouri River and the land is under ownership and how that's all divided with so many different various ownerships of entities, it was my intention to try and clarify what a shooting range was with this amendment. With that being said, I don't want to jeopardize your bill by offering this amendment at the same time. And so maybe we put it on and we take it back off on the Senate floor. But that's what I'm trying to do, is to further clarify land ownership of shooting ranges.
Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand what Senator Maher is trying to do. I think that I also have an amendment because I think that the behavior that we've heard of today that's been brought to light should be stopped immediately. So I would propose, I'm going to be proposing later an amendment to tag an emergency clause on this so that once this bill is signed by the governor, which I expect it to be, that it would go into law immediately. I think that because if this amendment would be supported to have the emergency clause attached, it would have to be concurred in on the House side, and I'm guessing that if we attached both amendments that Representative Eklund would have another bite at the apple with a conference committee. If instead of agreeing to concur in, he could then have a conference committee set up so that the bill could be further vetted before final passage. So I don't mind the language that Senator Maher, or the emergency clause being attached, as long as there's going to be one extra hearing for this to be heard out and made to be more perfect. Especially if we have an emergency clause and we know that it would go into effect immediately.
Senator Beal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Understanding that neither of these amendments are on the bill, but just discussing the process as a whole, I actually think they're both really important, partly for the emergency clause reasons that Senator Lederman just mentioned, but I think possibly, depending on the other definitions of a shooting range that may exist in statute, I'm concerned that without this amendment, that the private land situation that's been discussed this morning might not be remedied. I'm concerned that a private landowner with, you know, one target and maybe not much else set up in place might say this doesn't meet the definition of what a shooting range actually is and therefore doesn't come under any of what we're doing today. And so I think this makes it a lot more clear and kind of spells out what we're really trying to do and what we're intending to do with this law. And as Senator Lederman said, there will be more of the process that continues with this too. So I'm hopeful that conversation continues, but I really want to make sure that we're addressing all the situations, both public and private land, that have been brought up today.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I think it's interesting that even while we're talking about it up here, we're hearing more with Senator Maher having experience with this. Does seem to be not just an isolated incident either. So, discussing on the amendment, the first one, 1234 Juliet Alpha, I don't see where there's any harm done by defining it as public or private land. Just a moment here, though. Senator Lederman is bringing something. Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure that we are putting the amendment, Senator Maher's amendment, in the correct place, and it is under 21-10-33, which is the definition of a sport shooting range, and it does broaden that, or it focuses that definition for the purposes that have been brought forth today. I think it provides more relief, and I would urge passage.
Mr. Chairman, I just have an amendment to 1234J.
Motion is moving Amendment 1234JA, moved by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Beal. Any discussion on that motion?
I will just follow up with the quote on the book here. Shooting ranges, this is the definition. And 21-10-33 is the definition of shooting range. And it is my intent to try and further clarify the definition of the shooting range by adding in located on public or private land and operated by a private entity or public entity that includes unlawful.
law enforcement shooting range is already in the definition. So,
any further discussion on 1234 Juliet Alpha, the amendment? Seeing none, this is just a voice vote. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? House Bill 1234 is thereby amended. Senator Lederman, would you like to discuss your amendment? The amendment Senator Lederman is discussing puts an emergency clause on it, which would have the bill take effect immediately and not wait for several months down the line. So, Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not aware of whether or not the entities that we are talking about have curtailed their activity or behavior and because of this legislation. But either way, I feel that we would be irresponsible for letting this session end without putting an emergency clause on this. Because if, let's say, the bill's passed and then there's a period of time till July 1st, we could see more of an aggravation of this situation, and I would rather see us put an end to it now than have it drag on till July 1st. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the amendment 1234, Juliet Bravo? We haven't even had a motion on it yet. Motion is to amend House Bill 1234 with 1234JB, moved by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Buell. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, this is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? House Bill 1234 is thereby amended. So now we are on to 1234 as doubly amended. Any further discussion on that? I'd like to thank the committee. I think I actually really approve of both amendments. I think that they're both really good steps onto what is already a really good bill. So the chair will look for a motion on 1234 as amended.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 1234 as amended.
The motion is do pass on 1234 as amended, moved by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, Secretary, please call the roll. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston's excused. Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Holeen?
Aye.
Unanimous, 6.
Motion is unanimous on 1234. Do pass as amended. And thank you very much, committee. That concludes our business for the day. We do have one more meeting. At least, I think we have just one more bill coming to before Commerce and Energy, and that's going to be on Thursday. It's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be House Bill 1142. I'm sure we've all been lobbied on it before. With all that said, the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Senator Lederman, seconded by Senator Maher. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much.